Welcome to Look Behind the Look, the celebrated podcast that explores your favorite looks in film, television, and fashion history. Through conversations with the fashion world's elite and award-winning hair, makeup, and costume designers on sets around the world, you will see and hear exciting tales from behind the scenes, career origin stories, and tons of advice and tips. I'm your host, Tiffany Bartok. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Look Behind the Look, the awards barrage installment. I know I am dropping frequently. It went from nothing because life was insane to all of the amazing heavy hitters all in one month. That's the way the cookie crumbles. It's just that time of year that every 5 seconds a mind-blowing movie comes out. I don't know why they do this to us all at the same time, but they do. And I'm not mad at it because I love to see a mind-blowing movie every 5 minutes. It's just me. This is a movie I saw a while ago. It's Saltburn. It's super polarizing. I stand on the side of loving it. I think it might have been my favorite movie of the year so far. I mean, I know it was my favorite movie of the year so far. I talked today to Sean Miller, who's been on the show before for Cyrano, which was another amazing piece of work by her. It was a beautiful film 2 years ago. Yes. Oh my gosh, time is flying. And this time we're talking about all things Saltburn, all the beautiful hair that Jacob Elordi has, all of the looks, all of the insanity. And this is a great conversation. We had a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoy it.
Did you know there was a college Christmas party tonight?
NFI, me and you.
Not fucking invited.
You all right?
Yeah, I've got a flat tire.
Take my bike.
Hey, that was so kind. Thank you. I'm sorry I don't know your name. I'm Felix.
Oliver.
Oliver. Oliver, I love you. I love you. All right, cheers, Ollie.
My parents, they've got problems.
What kind of? What do you mean, problems?
I don't think I'll ever go home again.
Well, why don't you come home with me? Come to Saltburn.
Mr. Quick.
Wow.
And here he is now.
Oh, what beautiful eyes. Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, I told you it wasn't a minger.
Oh, but darling, you're kind about everyone. You can't be trusted.
I had them hang up an old school dinner jacket. We dressed for dinner here.
Dressed for dinner?
Yeah, it was like black tie.
I think I like you even more than last year's one.
You're so,
So what?
Real.
Okay. Sean, how are you?
Really good. I'm really good. Yeah, I'm buzzing. I'm buzzing on the back of Saltburn's release. So, yeah.
Yes. So you have been, this is a press day for you. So you've been just plowing through all of the excitement. And what's that?
I've just talked for an hour. Unfortunately, I'm good at talking.
Yeah. I know. Well, unfortunately, there's quite a bit to talk about. We are going to talk about Saltburn today, and you are the hair and makeup designer on Saltburn. First, let's just say, okay, so I had been looking forward to talking to you about Saltburn before I saw it. And then I saw it, and then the studio reached out the next day, and I was like, oh, they beat me to it, to reaching out to you, because I was like, this is happening. We are going to talk about this movie. This is my favorite movie of the year, hands down. And I just absolutely loved it. I didn't expect to even love it that much, because I don't normally like gothic types of movies. So I just want to dig in. How did this project get to you? Oh, also, we should say spoiler alert, because I just in case, I hope that everybody will have seen it by the time they come here. So so tell me how the project came to you this time.
So my agent got in touch with me and said, I've got a script by Emerald Fennell. Well, that was it. Instantly, promising young woman. I was like, okay, yes, when, where? I met with Emerald on the back of COVID and a night shoot with 3 hours sleep, set my alarm, desperate to meet her. She was actually casting at that point. The date had been moved. I was like, I can't, Emerald had had to move it around, and it was just suddenly there was a date. And I was like, okay, I've just had COVID, doesn't matter. I've had 3 hours sleep, it doesn't matter. I'm there. And that's how it came about. And we were, I think it's safe to say, a meeting of minds. I couldn't put the script down when I read it. Mm. And then I read it again, did a lot of prep before I met her. And we chatted and I got the job.
Yay! What do you think? What do you think she really responded to about what you were saying in that interview?
I think with the principal characters, the way I had imagined them in my mind's eye and some of the cultural references, I think very much what she was thinking as well. We shared a love of Killing of a Sacred Deer. I'd worked with Barry before.
What did you work with Barry on?
I'd worked with him on Eternals. I didn't look after him, but I'd done the Eternals with him. So I knew Barry.
So you knew what you were going to get. Yeah, yeah.
I knew Barry. And I just think it was just a meeting of minds. I think I'd done, I was very, very prepared for my meeting with her. And for example, for Elspeth, for Rosamund Pike, you know, I had notions of kind of the socialite it girls like Sienna Miller, Laura Bailey, that kind of characters. For Venetia, that kind of slightly grungy rock kind of Kate Moss vibe.
Yes.
Georgia McJagger. You know, we were kind of, I was saying the right things, you know,
right.
And the tattoos and the side bangs and the, you know, so it was just a yes, yes. It was one of those meetings.
Oh, I love it. And exchanging of like one better idea and one better idea. Oh, that's amazing when that happens.
Cyrano as well. And she'd loved that. So, you know, it was just, yeah, I got the gig.
Yes. Yes. And the Cyrano was the last one that we spoke about. And so if anybody listening did not catch Cyrano because it had a wonky release, remember, it was just so unfair. So your work was brilliant on that. And so everyone needs to see that immediately. That's a lovely film. I just absolutely loved it too. And your work is incredible in that as well. How different was this? Like this. So you read the script. Where did they shoot it? And where is it? Was it shot where the script said it was going to be shot?
We shot it in 48 days.
Oh my God.
Just over 8 weeks. Incredibly tight schedule.
Wow.
I just have to revisit that because I in my head, I'd added 3 weeks to that. It was actually 48 days. It was 8 weeks and 3 days. We filmed in a house in an ancestral estate that's never been filmed in. Which was incredible. And then we were there for 6 weeks and then we went out on the road. Was it 5 weeks? Maybe it was 5 weeks. And then we had about 2 to 3 weeks. We went to Oxford. We used a couple of, there's a little bit in London and then a couple of places that matched with other places.
So it was actually Oxford. Okay.
Yeah. So, well, yes, it was Oxford for the university part. Absolutely. And we went there. I think it had to be, and I've read a lot of stuff since then from Josie McNamara and Emerald, where they've talked about how it was really important to try and get to Oxford. So it was very much timed that we got there just before term actually started.
Ah, perfect.
In real life. You know, we shot the Radcliffe camera. We shot the kind of iconic parts of Oxford. It's undeniably Dreaming Spires. Oh, it's Oxford. But the majority of the film was in this unnamed, so I'm not allowed to say where, but this privately owned country.
What an incredible set. I mean, and the garden was also included in that. This was all the same look. Yeah. Okay. Wow. And tell me about the sculpture at the end. Was that a set piece or what that was there?
Well, that's a set piece. That's
okay.
Set piece.
Incredible. Yeah, incredible. Yeah. I wouldn't want that in my garden.
Oh, no. It was incredible. And how they created the maze was incredible.
Totally.
Yeah, there's so much detail in the film. And having that, the geography that house afforded everybody was incredible.
Oh. Yeah. Now, let's talk about your work. It was incredible, obviously, because it was so effortless. And like, the Paris Hilton of it all, and just like the effortless effort, and Jacob's hair, and all of these delicious things. Let's talk about Carey Mulligan first. She was definitely I went to a screening that was a pre-screening, and the audience it was like a black comedy to my audience. So there was just, the minute she came on, everybody just was laughing knowingly, like that this woman, everybody knows this woman. So tell me who she was to you and how that look was created.
She had to be uncomfortable dressed from morning, you know, from breakfast through till bedtime. And that was very much the kind of brief from Emerald. It's how she was written in the script. And we looked at the sets that she was going to be in and the backdrop. And we, you know, between us, we thought, Emerald and I decided that she should be red.
Okay.
Karen Elson was definitely
nice. Well.
Definitely with a little bit of Kate Bush thrown in there, were definitely original. I worked with Sophie Canali, of course, costume designer.
She brilliant.
Put together pieces were fantastic. I had very, very little access to Carey. I got her the day before we filmed. So I put together mood boards. We Zoomed. I sent her those. I'd found a Chanel campaign, actually, from 2007, which was amongst my mood boards, which very much gave me the idea of the colour with all those lovely clarets and the rouge noir-esque kind of nails.
Yes.
The dark lips and the over kind of overarched eyebrows, which were overextended, which actually always slightly my homage to the late Robert McCann and those fabulous eyebrows he did for goodness me, I can't remember the name now. Nicole Kidman, goodness me.
Oh, yes.
Or Moulin Rouge.
Yes, that eyebrow is on my wall.
I love those eyebrows. They've always stuck in my mind. That's slightly 30s overextension. Totally. So I wanted that in there. One of my pictures was very much bald around the eyes. So we decided that we wouldn't go with lashings and mascara. That it would be all about that little beautiful kind of like lovely smolder with the eyeshadow.
Okay.
So I have a kind of slightly spookiness about it. And then we made a little bit of Carey's own mole. And then, of course, the tattoos. Which I had done a lot of tattoos anyway for Felix and for Venetia.
Because they have corresponding tattoos, no? Okay.
Tattoos. They have tattoos that are, a few of them are derived from the family crest. There are stars from the family crest. Jacob's Carpe Diem tattoo.
I noticed that.
Written in the font of the family crest. They have stars on their hands.
Yes.
Venetia has a tattoo which couldn't read anything. So it's actually derived from the pie sequence, as in the maths pie sequence, which is my nod to shepherd's pie, as in the shepherd's pie scene.
I love that.
Slightly a bit of Amy Winehouse with the heart, but of course it had to say daddy.
Yeah.
The mirror of them, the placement was kind of like, you know, it's almost like she's got this mirror to her life. Everything's tragic. There's a lot of bad luck. So I thought, I sat on set in the night shoot just with a sketch pad and a Blackwing pencil, just drawing. Thinking, well, lucky, okay, cards, playing cards, dice. You know, she's been a drug addict. She's in recovery. She probably dreams that her teeth are falling out. So there's a floating molar. There's a pill. Of course, there's prescription drugs. So there's a pill which is sort of inspired by Damien Hirst's pharmacy era. So it looks like a capsule. And then her backstory, which her and Roz created these backstories between them, which were when they used to go out with rock stars. And so Paul Di Pamela went out with Richard Ashcroft from Verb, it turned out. So the pill says R and then Ash, rash. And that's the nod to that. So we just collectively, when I could get a moment with Emerald, shove them under her nose, what about that? And I had to have a very drawn quality. There's a horseshoe, which of course is a symbol of luck, but it's up the other way. And it says Lucky, which is my homage to Lucky Chap.
Nice.
Nice, get that one in there.
Yes.
There's all sorts. There's a dagger, you know, she's been out with all this, she's with this Russian, or was with this Russian oligarch. It turns out he throws people off roofs. There's all sorts in there. That's very much a kind of a map. And then there's the Russian-inspired rings on her fingers, which are the face of the dice. And then there's baby. There's a lot in there.
Okay, we need her origin story to be the sequel.
Yes, indeed. We need to bring her back. So
now, did she get any of these tattoos actually tattooed?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Carrie has a couple of tiny tattoos, which she has the rights to. So we incorporated those in. One's like a little bird. I forget the other one, tiny, somehow. It's so acceptable to see them. And so, yeah, I got her the day before we filmed and we put it all together.
Oh, my goodness.
One day, put it all together, cut the hair, the wig on her head, took it to set, got it signed off, and then we shot for 3 days. So, it was
3 days.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was quite nail biting, but it was at the same time, you know, that white knuckle ride of kind of like the clock's ticking and you've got to pull it together. We prepped, you know, I had a great team with me helping me pull it off on the day. It was an achievement, but I'm really pleased with the look. And I've seen the film, I think, four times, a couple of times in the States, a couple of times in the UK. And I love the reaction to her from the audience.
Oh, so, I bet. Are you telling me she only shot for 3 days?
Yeah.
I'm in shock right now. I cannot even believe that. What a powerhouse.
Yeah, 48 days. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's Emerald as well, because I think with Emerald, you know, they have such a great relationship. There's so much trust. There was so much collaboration on this film. I think the outpouring on Instagram from the crew in the last few days is so demonstrative of that. The fact that we worked so well as a team. And I think the tone of the film is really tight. And I think between Linus and Susie Davis, the costume designer, Sophie, myself, sound, you know, everybody that worked on the film, you know, whether it's the art department, it's the standbys, it's, there was such collaboration. So it was, and just a love of our boss. I mean, she's amazing. So it really helped pull it all together.
I can't believe what she did. I mean, to get these beautiful, strong men and women to do what they did so intimately for her. I mean, I just was gobsmacked. Just she must just be magical. And I wonder, what kind of leader is she? I see set pictures where she's sitting with everyone and talking. There must be a lot of conversation and right. I guess a collaborative effort. Right. Right.
There's no going through an army of people to get to Emerald. It was, you know, and at the end of every week, there was a certificate of the week where somebody on your team or someone else's team would be, one of my girls got it 1 week, would be, hers was for maintaining Paul Reese's hair color throughout filming. Somebody, the person, I think the first week was the standby art director for very wrangling the dead flies on the flypaper that are hanging from the chair. When Felix arrives and he goes into that great, when Oliver arrives and he makes Felix, he goes into Great Hall. So, you know, there was so much camaraderie. We had so much fun. This film is testament to the fact that you can have a huge amount of fun making a film, like we all say we used to.
Right.
We still do, because we did, and we made this really great film whilst having a huge amount of fun.
Right.
And everyone was so invested in it.
Yes.
And I think what's great is that, you know, Emerald had autonomy with making this film. I think, you know, with having the, you know, lucky chap behind her.
Right.
You know, again, so much trust and freedom for Emerald to do what she does brilliantly. And I think having a director who's written the piece as well, undeniably, that's a great advantage. And also she's an actor, so she's got a great...
Oh, right.
And it's the set.
Yeah.
So she's incredibly pragmatic. So it was really easy to problem solve. And, you know, dare I say it, she's a woman. You know, a lot of the HODs were women. You know, there was that ability to kind of go, okay, let's fix this. What can we do? Okay, let's do that. So it was a really kind of a fluid process. Yeah.
Right. Speaking of fluid, Can we talk about what, how do you do Jacob's beautiful hair? Does he, are you going to tell me something like, I don't do anything to it? It flows and it's so beautiful.
I mean, he was the only one of the boys that actually I ended up with the please grow your hair that we'd asked for. And, you know, I started off with a, which I'd written about, a Sassoon's classic basic layer, which I cut in.
Okay.
That's slightly 70s kind of vibe.
Right, right.
Like it not been cut. Like it's just like he wakes up and rolls out of bed, disheveled and tousled, and is just gorgeous on arrival.
Right, right, right.
And without trying hard, I mean, he wears pretty naff clothes, but he's gorgeous. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's a bit daft, but he's the it boy.
Yeah.
So, you know, various products, you know, there was Wetting It Down. There was a Veda Can Fixer with a bit of diffusing. And then there's a bit of Bumble and Bumble dry spun finish in there. There's various products just to try and, you know, contrive the uncontrived, which I think is equally as technical as creating a black eye. You know,
right,
as natural as it does. And I think that's the thing with all of the characters in this is there's I think you said at the beginning, they needed to be something effortless about them. And aside from Oliver, certainly when we first see him as well, when he's got the Zac Efron kind of side swept hair, straightened. Barry's actually got quite textured hair.
Was I picking up on Dead Poets Society vibes a little bit or no?
Maybe. There was a little bit of Justin Bieber. There was a little bit of that kind of hero with that kind of, you know, and he arrives, you know, looking very geeky. He's got all the wrong clothes on. He's gone and got the uniform. I mean, nobody does that, it turns out, you know. So, and then he dispenses with his glasses and then, you know, turns into the wannabe Felix. And again, trying to sort of contrive that. I've gone off script a little bit here, but from what you first asked me, but with Barry, you know, it was...
No, I was going to ask about Barry too, yeah.
Well, yeah, well, what was interesting with him is that he'd had an unscheduled haircut, shall we say.
Okay.
And he was in every scene. He'd been in something else, and I didn't have the length I wanted. And I think the actor, the kind of actor that Barry is, and the fact that he was in almost every scene, and allowing him time to prepare.
Okay.
And the 48-day schedule. Wigging him was just not an option.
I mean,
there would be people watching this and think, oh, I could get a wig on him. It just wasn't an option. It would have been too much to try to achieve with allowing him what he needed as well to play that part.
Got it.
So I needed to create something schedule permitting that I could convert. So it was, I wanted what I've been calling a convertible hairstyle that would get me from that Zac Efron-esque bit to the Felix wannabe, to what I call, he would call it Paul Newman, I call it Cary Grant at the end. And so I put hair extensions in him to get me the extra length that I needed.
Ah.
And then fortunately with the schedule, I was able by the end to remove some of those, so and let it grow a bit and then cut it when I need it. So I was able to walk within that frame and create really pretty much it's one kind of haircut where I've got a little extra length when I need it and not when I don't, but it's that, so it's convertible because there was a bit of jumping around. And that was potentially on paper quite tricky, but I think it really pulled off the fact that when we see him, undeniably at the beginning, there's such a transformation between him at the beginning, then the middle and the end.
I would have never known that much effort was put into such an effortless look. That's amazing.
And I think with Archie Madikwe, again, that's a bat piece. He had an undercut, so over half that hair is not his. So there's a back piece, there's hair wefts. And then we highlighted what he had on top.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, all this was missing from Archie. So,
oh, wow.
That's all added. Of course, Elspeth's added. I think of the eight principals, including Duncan, five of them are either wearing a wig, a back piece, weft, or extensions.
Wow.
I did as much work, if not more work, than when I did the period film. It's fascinating.
Oh, that's what it's.
And it's 2006, 2007. I mean, we had all the guys turn up with fades. Nobody had a fade back then. Nobody had a shape up. No, the black guys, none of them had a shape up.
Oh.
with the you know, the white guys with the kind of the preppy straight
hair. Sure. Yeah.
It was all faded hair. Back then, all the length was in the nape. If you think about Adam Brody back in the time.
Yes.
All of the shows. So we had to cut the back off wigs.
Okay.
Add that and add wefts and then side sweat fringes for the girls. We had to get rid of balayage by putting in stripes and slices and
those chunks. Yes.
Create that kind of, it was actually quite crude back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although it seems like it's relatively recent, it's still undeniably a very distinct 21st century period.
It's weird, I really give you a lot of props for being able to really peg it down, because that whole era is sort of an abyss of there's nothing truly iconic about that time. So, but you really, I mean, I believed I was there for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
especially with Venetia's makeup and her whole behavior and everything.
Alison Oliver is incredible. It was just incredible. And I think having arrived with that shoulder length, light brown, one length hair, virgin hair, what was incredible is that she is such an invested actor. She's incredible. Mm,
clearly. That bathtub scene.
Another play at the Almeida, which has just closed, and she's phenomenal.
Oh, really? Which play?
It was called Portia Coughlin.
Okay.
Which is really, really good. It's just closed. Amazing reviews. I mean, she's phenomenal. And she's incredibly invested, incredibly well researched. So I showed her the pictures of the hair, and we talked about the makeup and the grubby bronzer and fake tan and the chip nails.
She had a fake tan
and she had chip nails and you know, the grungy eyeliner And I said, look, what I want to do is I don't want to wig you. I want to put a ton of bonded hair extensions in.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do it 6 weeks before we shoot, so we get that really dirty root.
Britney Spears.
We want to see the extensions, and we want brick hair. In fact, I remember when we did the screen tests at the beginning, before we started shooting, and Margot Robbie appeared, because she just managed to, I think she just wrapped on Barbie. And I think she just snuck in whilst we'd already started, and she comes straight from set. And I just heard her say, oh my God, those brittle ends, that's brilliant.
Oh, nice.
We wanted the, especially with the such big close-ups, I wanted that, because we know that bleach, we can call it bleach. Let's call it pre-lightener or lightener, but it's bleach.
It's bleach.
Wrap it up with a bow. It's bleach. And we know it's just the hair. And that's what we wanted. We wanted to see that. So you've got the roots, the chip nails, the bleach, the NAF tattoos, the grungy eyeliner. None of it's perfection. And none of it should look like it's just been done. So
yes.
All of that we wanted to draw together. And so there was an incredible lot of detail that did go into contriving that uncontrived look.
But then she did do things for the party. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So yes, because I was thinking while you were saying this, like there was no one to look good for, you know, like she wasn't interested. I mean, I guess Barry, but you know, like this was good enough. Right. Yeah. But
she dresses up at breakfast as well. She puts on something rather fabulous or sheer, but it's in that kind of teenage way.
Yes.
You know, she's done something. It might have been a tong, or it might have been putting her hair up, or putting it in. There's one with bunches, which is kind of cutesy. But the party, that fabulous cobweb dress. I mean, I knew then it had to be something up, but it had to look like she'd done it herself. And it's full of, the hair is actually full of joke shop spiders. But so there's diamond spiders that come from some kind of brooch that's an heirloom piece.
Okay.
There's also joke shop plastic spiders in the hair too. And that's what this is all about. It's about the bowl of knickknacks sitting on the table next to the Lalique that's full of cigarettes. And the Henry VIII original portrait is hanging behind. And that's what it's all about. It's about plastic spiders in the hair from the joke shop. And it's the heirloom diamante. You know, brooch.
High art, low art, for sure. Yes,
it's all of that. So that was great fun to put together. Yeah,
and let's talk about Rosamund for a bit. Like, what were the elements for that? That was she was best. I mean, best performance I've ever. I mean, she's amazing always, but I've never seen her like this.
She is incredible. And so wonderful to work with. And yeah, so my starting point, which I think I mentioned in the beginning, was kind of those, you know, with Sienna Miller, Laura Bailey, kind
yes.
of elegant, kind of, you know, effortlessly beautiful, kind of model type person that's just, you know, with the razor sharp wit and the tongue, you know.
So good.
And fabulous clothes. So I wanted long hair because I felt that, you know, that it's kind of cliched, but these types of women, they always seem to have long hair.
They do. They can't let it go because it was good then and now. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whether you're married to a Rolling Stone or whatever you are. Yes. So I feel like, you know, it had to be long hair. I wanted to work with what Roz had. I talked about, so she came with a kind of an A-line bob, which is growing out. So in a roundabout way, and again, I got very late access to her. So I actually had the piece made before I could get her hair colored.
Okay.
So when we got the hair color, her yeah. hair color, as opposed I see. To her hair being colored and then matching the piece to her hair.
Sure.
Her hair color to the piece, which is not wow. quite the way. So we had a back piece made with some weft and some strings, which are like the really skinny kind of wefts that you could just put through invisibly here, just to break up the line. And then just decided that she would just do that every day. And that Love. Would be it. Bar the party scenes and a couple of, I think, dinner scenes where she's put her hair up. I knew that fabulous dress as Titania for the party scene. I knew that, you know, she had to have her hair up. So I employed the use of switches for that. So, and again, incorporating her own hair and her natural hairline. And again, the makeup, she's such a beautiful woman anyway, but I wanted to do something that was just gracefully and effortlessly beautiful.
Yes, you it know? Wasn't, I was surprised that it wasn't, precise and sharp. You know what I mean? I liked that a lot.
Yeah, and it was purposefully like that. It had mm-hmm, to be.
Of course.
Just had that casual, effortless lounging around my wonderful ancestral estate. Whatever we do, let's have a party.
Yeah.
Scornfully looking at her friends, disdainfully looking at the guests and
oh, the two-facedness was just sublime. Like it was so yeah. accurate and amazing.
Her makeup couldn't be a statement. You know, it would have yeah. been a step too far. So that was what was really important with creating her look, is that it had that sense of kind of understatement about it.
And it was good enough that it did look yeah. intentional and that we knew she could pull out all the stops when needed, you know, right? Like you knew that it wasn't like something she wasn't good at or something. It wasn't no. It wasn't like that. It was just like, yeah. I'm choosing to not do it today. You know, I'm choosing to just do yeah. this much, just do enough today.
Well, the yeah. reaction when she's out there with Oliver and he's planting the seed about poor dear Pamela. And then she says about Alison for Venetia and the fingers for pudding. And then Oliver said something like, well, you know, well, I mean, of course, you know, with you being a mother, so what do you mean? And he says about, well, you know, with you being so gorgeous or so attractive yes. or whatever it is. And she does that funny kind of faux, oh, look, it's a fabulous look.
I'm not yes. Watching. Yes.
It's, and that sums it up yes. because she is very beautiful. She has got that elegance. She's got it all.
Yes.
She's got the country pile, but somehow it's not enough.
I mean, you know, Common People was written about her.
Common People, and you know, but she hadn't been to Greece. She didn't have it all. She didn't have a thirst for knowledge.
Mm.
Yeah, never read a book in her life, or whatever it says in the
best part. It was so yeah, funny.
The lines are brilliant. So I think it had to be something that was yes, it's very much there, but an understatement and very much a kind of just a support to that characterization that she's
right made. It was flawless. Yeah, fantastic. Oh, everybody was so good. I'm afraid we've run out of time. I only got a half hour with you, I think. Oh, I did, we went over. Oh my goodness, I'm sorry, Deanna.
So good to talk to you.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you.
There's so much, because there's so much detail in there, which is what's so
I know wonderful. I know, because, you know, oh, one last question.
Yes.
Who Who are you prepared to say that Barry was talking to in the interviews?
In the movie. Oh, in the movie, who's he talking to? Do you know, when I read the script, I wondered, you're talking about the bit at the beginning where he's talking to Captain Swanson 4-4. When I read the script, and it says, I think it says in the script, you know, we don't know where he is. You know, he could be being interviewed by the police. He could be.
Exactly.
He could be being interviewed by a journalist. He could be, and do you know what? I don't think we will ever know.
I know. Okay. I was wondering. I was like, how can I?
I don't think I actually
I don't
know.
Either. I don't and either.
Is he talking to himself in the mirror? You know?
Oh my gosh, that's an interesting thought.
Is he talking to himself in the mirror? You know, has it all come about? Is it
or like... It could be a tape that he's leaving behind, something like this. That was one question. It was the first question I wanted to ask you, but I wasn't going to let you go till I asked you.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder whether he's it's an ode. It's a talking to himself.
Yes, that's really on brand because of the ending and everything.
Aside from Duncan, who is never changing, he's the constant. And of course, we do know. Farley is back in the States, or is he? Who knows?
Right.
He's back in the States, but Farley's been cast aside again. I mean, he could, of course, reappear, but I don't suppose he'd have much luck. You know, he's there. Who's he with?
Right.
You know, right. He's rattling around that house naked, dancing to Sophia. Rather brisky.
The best. Like, the best moves. Like, amazing. It was.
Best. I call
the check
it.
In the mirror. The
soundtrack. I've been playing the soundtrack now in the car. I've been playing it. My husband's actually, he's got a band. He's incorporated the soundtrack into a couple of...
That's brilliant.
So I think that in itself is just the music. Anthony Willis's brilliant composition has just become iconic.
Yeah, it's so...
Back in the charts.
I assume it will come out on vinyl, which I will be purchasing for sure, because I want that album art for sure in my life.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I should be getting some posters and light boxes.
Yes. Oh, Sean, it was so wonderful to talk to you. I can't wait to talk to you about whatever you're doing next time. And enjoy all of these accolades. They're well deserved. And I will be seeing the movie again and again and again. And I'm truly, truly impressed by your work in it.
Thank you so much, Tiffany. It's a pleasure to see you again. Hope to see you soon.
You too, Sean. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
Look Behind the Look is a Vinyl Foot production, written by me, your host, Tiffany Bartok, produced by Jace Bartok, edited by Evan Rivard. If you're interested in learning more, find our video version on the YouTube channel, Look Behind the Look Podcast. There you can see rare photos and clips from our guests. And please follow us on Twitter at Look Behind Pod and Instagram at Look Behind the Look. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe. And tell your friends and spread the word. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or any podcatcher of your choice. Thanks for listening to Look Behind the Look.